Hello all, welcome back to another episode of A Queen's Roundtable Show and Podcast. Let me say this, I am your host, Dr. Jacqueline Kabay-Harrison. If you have not subscribed as of yet to A Queen's Roundtable channel on YouTube, then please do so. That way you can become a part of the family, as well as you will be up to date on just before we go live and all of the upcoming shows that we have, just to make sure you don't miss out. And definitely tell a friend. A Queen's Roundtable Show and Podcast is dedicated to personal, professional, and leadership development for women in business. So the topics vary. Also, if you are interested in being a guest on the show, whether you want to spotlight your brand, you know, your business, you have a new book coming out, you have a new project, a new product, whatever the case is, let's definitely connect. I would love to have you as a guest on the show. So let's segue in to today's Queen's Spotlight is Griselda Ramsey. So we're going to be talking in the area of mental health. So, you know, tune in, grab a pen and a pad, and I'm going to bring her into the studio in just a moment. Initially, I'm going to let you know a little bit more about Miss Ramsey. All right, so I am a therapist, life, spiritual coach, consultant, the solutions therapist, real problems, real solutions, helping you tap into the power within to begin your life destiny. Get in touch with your purpose, keep in touch with the purpose, and stay in touch with your destiny. Miss Griselda Ramsey is a woman of passion and compassion for the well-being of others. She offers over 20 years of experience in counseling, coaching, and consulting. She is a licensed master social worker. She has a passion for restoring broken families and mending relationships and helping people find solutions to their circumstances through clinical and spiritual practices, incorporating life experiences, observations, and knowledge with practical life lessons. Griselda assists her clients by treating the whole person from a person-centered approach, seeing the client as a partner in their healing. She promotes healing of the mind, body, and spirit through healthy lifestyle practices. One of Griselda's missions is helping the faith community to understand mental illness, to understand mental health in our community and remove the stigma of seeking therapy, breaking through barriers and strongholds that attack and destroy individuals, marriages, and families in our communities, in our community, and helping women to heal from trauma and brokenness and walk in their purpose. She is also establishing a new passion in working with men in therapy to help them identify emotional barriers established by environment and societal trauma and painful experiences and create a healing path to authenticity and healthy relationship within family and their community. In June of 2020, she officially did a full launch and became the CEO of Life Changing Therapeutic Services, LLC, which is a private practice offering therapy, counseling, consulting, training, speaking engagements, and workshops. She received her Master of Social Work degree Master of Social Work degree and a graduate certification in social work practice with couples and families in 2003 from Wayne State University. She also earned a Master of Arts in Education, Adult Education, and Training in 2012 from the University of Phoenix. She will be pursuing a doctorate degree in Organizational Leadership in Behavioral Health at Grand Canyon University. Lastly, she is the wife of Pastor Nicholas D. Ramsey of the Church of the Living God, Living God CWFF Temple 279 in Detroit, Michigan. She is blessed to be the mother of two adult children and one granddaughter and one grandson. Griselda has served in ministry for 10 years, and in July of 2019, she was ordained as an evangelist with the Church of Living God, CWFF. And one of her favorite scriptures is from Isaiah 43:2 NLT. When you go through deep waters, I will be with you. When you go through rivers of difficulty, you will not drown. When you walk through the fire of oppression, you will not be burned up. The flames will not consume you. And she is professionally known as the Solutions Therapist, and she is also a published author. So without further ado, we're going to bring her into the virtual studio. Well, hello there, Ms. Griselda. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Dr. Jackie?
I am great. I'm actually looking at a note here on my computer that my computer wants to shut down and install updates. And I'm like, okay. But it doesn't give me an option to select a later time. So hopefully we'll be okay.
All right.
But thank you. So we'll see. Thank you all for joining us for the Eight Queens Roundtable show and podcast. Make sure we're here every Sunday at 3 p.m. Make sure you subscribe if you have not already to the Eight Queens Roundtable channel on YouTube. Okay. So you can stay up to date with everything. So Ms. Griselda, welcome to the studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So I know I read your bio. But kind of, you know, fill some of it in, you know, let us know a little bit more, I guess, in reference to, like, how did you get on this mission? How did you realize or come to know that this was your purpose?
I think when I was in elementary school, I started out wanting to be a doctor, a medical doctor, a pediatrician or OBGYN. And along the pathway of life, I veered toward therapy and counseling. I always knew I wanted to help people, and just the capacity of which I did that change. So back in elementary school, I knew that I was destined to help people figure some things out. You know, seeing trauma and going through trauma or having, you know, trauma in my family really kind of like prepared me for this spot right now. I'm very passionate about doing therapy. It's not a job for me. It's a passion for me. And so I, you know, people say, how do you see so many people in 1 week? Or how do you work such long hours? Because it doesn't feel like a job to me. And when I do need to take a vacation, I do take a vacation, or I take some self-care time to myself. So.
Okay. So one of the things that I've heard often about social workers, and it rings true for me, there's usually, or very often, I'll say, a component to it that, like a specific reason as to why we went into social work or why we want to help other people. Is there did you have any particular experiences maybe in the past where you felt that you needed someone, but maybe they weren't there, or you kind of saw that, you know, that there was a gap that needed to be bridged, or any, you know, something along those lines?
Not really. Thankfully, I had a very supportive family. Even though I'm the child of a divorce, my mother and father were there for the most part, and my grandparents were there for the most part. And like I said, I have a supportive village even then and now. And then when I was 16 years old and went to my church, they embraced me right away. So I've always had a village behind me. I think because I started out as pre-med, I remember talking to a psychiatrist. It was at the time that HMOs were created, at that time when they became a law. And he was saying to me that things were shifting, and the way that we practice medicine and the way the psychiatrists practice medicine was changing. Mm-hmm. And he encouraged me to go into the field of social work, as opposed to, you know, things are just going to change. The way we do things as medical doctors are going to change. You know, that could have been a good or bad thing, but it worked for me. And at that time, I started looking into, you know, what that entailed. How would I help people? People have always gravitated toward me to get advice or to tell me things or lean on things. People always say that I had an old soul. And so at a very young age, I love being around older people at a very young age. So, you know, seeking the knowledge and the wisdom that they have. So I think I was just kind of destined toward that at a very young age.
Okay. All right. I was going to ask you something else and it just slipped me just that quick. So now your practice, when you started your practice, and what year was it? I know it was before the pandemic. No, was it before the pandemic or right after?
In some capacity, I started in 2010 in some capacity because I used to do contractual work with foster care children or children in, you know, who's referred to CPS. And I also did contractual therapy under my brand, you know, business name. But full-time launch into private practice happened June 2020 when the pandemic started. And, you know, for years I've been wanting to go into full private practice and have been putting it off. And so at that time I was like, with telehealth, you really have no excuse not to get started. You know, either you start now or don't even talk about it anymore. So in June of 2020 is when I got started in full time. Okay. And in 2021, I was in the Great Resignation that they talked about. And I left my job in 2021, June, 1 year later. So.
Wow. Okay. So 1 year later. Okay. You was able to pack that little box up and walk out that door and haven't turned back since, right?
Absolutely. And not looking forward, if I can help it, to ever going back.
I love it. So talk to us a little bit about mental health awareness and, you know, how you feel. And I know we touched a little bit on it in terms of in your bio and as far as like mental health and the stigma within the African-American community. And I know you've, you know, started working, I guess, more particularly too with men as well. So kind of, you know, tie into that a little bit. Let us know a little bit more about that.
Yes, I think thankfully I started noticing a shift when like Robin Williams committed suicide and you started seeing more and more celebrities talk about mental health. Taraji P. Henson and other people have really started to be crusaders for the mental health world. And now it's like almost a household name, not quite, but almost a household name, taking care of yourself mentally. I always say it's okay to not be okay, but it's not okay to not get help when you're not okay. So, you know, for us, it, me being my background and being in the faith community, we've always been geared toward let's pray about it, or you don't talk about those kind of things outside the house, or, you know, talk to God about it. But it's okay to love Jesus and to love a therapist also, or to seek therapy also. So my goal is to just really restoring and really breaking down the barriers that people have in seeking help. And trying to advertise or bring awareness to the fact that therapy is available in our community through Medicaid. We can get help, or, you know, if we can't afford to pay, you know, and some people think I can't afford a therapist, but they have made it vitally, you know, accessible to everybody. You know, even telehealth was one of the best things, because when you talk about men seeking therapy, you got men who probably would never walk into a therapist's office because, you know, in their mind, we don't do that. I'm crazy. I'm weak. I'm this, I'm that. But it's okay for me to talk to you virtually because nobody has to know while I'm, and at the same time, I'm getting help, the help that I need. And I'm learning how to put emotions and words together and break down barriers of trauma. Men have so much trauma that's never talked about hardly, you know, that they don't get to share. They don't get to work through. So it comes out. I always say for men, they have three responses. And one of those responses is I withdraw and I isolate, or I get defensive because I feel attacked. And the other one is anger. And anger covers all the other stuff. I'm hurt. I'm low self-esteem. I got trauma in my life. I'm in pain. And anger covers all of that because, you know, men are taught don't cry. You know, don't show your emotions. Don't cry. You just bury it. You just do what you got to do. And so, you know, years of that behavior systematically and individually comes out, it's got to come out somewhere. So it comes out in those three ways, is what I've noticed so much more for men. Men who happen to be in touch with their emotions and can express them, I give them, you know, all the kudos, but most men cannot, and most right. women cannot. So, you know, I love to do what I do and help people really attach words and feelings and emotions together.
You know what? It's interesting that you mentioned too, that even a lot of women that you run into have difficulty with their, you know, expressing their emotions. And that's interesting because, you know, typically women are, you know, typically more likely to talk about how we feel.
Right.
You know,
right.
So it's interesting to hear you say that. So, and I feel like I have more questions about the men too, but it's like, now I want to ask you about that. So you, how do you, so you actually, so you find that when women come in to see you, that it's, that what, do they feel ashamed and they don't want to share? Or is it that maybe their feelings are pushed down so deep, you know, that they're so used to kind of overlooking it or pushing past it? I mean, what do you think, what do you think is the reason that a lot of women have, you know, difficulty expressing themselves or sharing their emotions?
I think for women, two things happen. One is that in our community especially, but women, mm-hmm. I think in general, we're taught to be strong. We're taught to, especially Black women, we're taught to be strong. We're taught to bear what we got to bear, take care of this, take care of everybody but ourselves. And so we find that we are the last on the list of people that we take care of. And so we learn how to survive, but we don't learn how to heal. And so it manifests itself in a lot of times for women in a lot of broken relationships with men or with other people. We have all these broken, these relationships, or we're seeking love in all the wrong places because we have not learned how to heal from traumatic experiences or people talking crazy to us or talking down to us or talking, you know, we learn to think that's normal. And so it's not normal. And a lot of times women tend to act out, you know, sexually or otherwise, or even putting themselves on display sometimes because I want attention. I want people to look at me. And, you know, I always say the best form of sex appeal for a woman is, you know, you give them a little bit, but not too much, and let their imagination
fill in the blank.
Yes, you give them a sneak peek and let their imagination fill in the blank. We're so, you know, and I'm not knocking anybody that does plastic surgery, you know, do what you do and do what you have the money to do. But I do see that more and more women are so on display because we've been sexualized in a lot of ways, you know, in videos and rap videos and just period. You know, back in the day, they wouldn't dare show you a woman's silhouette or a tampon or anything on TV. But now it's second nature. So we're sexualized in a lot of ways and women act out in a lot of ways to get attention. And we don't, you know, and a lot of times we jump out of one relationship into another relationship without the healing process happening. And so we don't really understand who we are, what we need at the time. So that's why I say some women find it very difficult. Even though we are expressive people, that doesn't mean we're expressing ourselves in the right way.
Right. You know, you said a lot, Griselda. So let me just
walk it back.
let me take a moment to pause. And I'm pretty sure that other people, you know, as they listening to us, whether it's live or, you know, catching the replay, they're probably like, hey, I'm gonna have to listen to that part again. Cause you say quite a bit. So I want to make sure, and I didn't want to interrupt, but I definitely want to just kind of talk a little bit more in depth about how you know, this whole idea of the strong Black woman. Now, you know, I'm a therapist as well. And I guess what I find, and I totally agree with everything that you said. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I see women come in and it's more likely that they come in for therapy, mm-hmm. you know, versus the men. Like what I find with the men is they may come in, like they have a particular crisis going on.
Absolutely.
You know, something that's just, they just can't, you know, it's really, really like maybe a lot of different things compounding on one another. Let's just say mm-hmm. they'll come in And, you know, there's a lot of kind of shame around it, if you will, for lack of better words. And they'll usually come for a few sessions, but they don't continue. That's what I've experienced. Now, as far as women, I think women come in at a higher rate. And again, oftentimes it's as if they're coming there and they're, you know, admitting that things have gotten a little too out of control, you know, maybe kind of like a pressure cooker, right? Maybe they keep putting that, trying to push that top down, but they came in, right? But then I also noticed that there's like a point in therapy, you know, that how they kind of retract a little bit, mm-hmm. meaning they begin to say, you know, kind of rationalize their behavior, I guess.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, either they're rationalizing or they're like, okay, well, it wasn't that bad, you know, or, you know, I kind of, you know, I got over that. But it's like, for me, I look at that and I think that kind of plays into the whole strong Black woman. Because I know that I've been taught and that I've watched, you know, my mother, you know, my aunts, grandmothers, you know, things of that nature, and friends, mothers and so forth. Just that, you know, it's this attitude of, well, we don't have time to be sick, or, you know, we don't have time to have an off day, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, it's like, you know, put your makeup on, you know, fix your wig or whatever, you know, get your nice outfit on and, you know, and just, you know, carry on, you know? So I agree that that's so ingrained in us. And I don't know why it's so, or it makes it challenging for us just to kind of wave a little flag, or just or like how you mentioned earlier, to say, you know what, I'm really not okay, you know. And then I promise I'm gonna say this, and then I'm gonna give the mic over to you. And I think too, because like Black women are some of the most educated women, right, in this country, you know. I'm just talking about within the United States. And I think, you know, a lot of women, you know, they get different degrees, you know, they have their own house, they have these awesome careers, you know, they're able to take vacations and things of that nature. And I think that oftentimes when you start to peel that onion, right, you start to get at the core, you find out that there's a lot of insecurities or a lot of
100%.
Right, they don't even know who they are. Like how you mentioned earlier, you know, and how you touched base on earlier about like the plastic surgery and, you know, let's say weight loss and I don't know, just whatever, getting the eyebrows tattooed on, the lashes out there, whatever the case. Right? I'm sorry, that's just too much for me. But you know, it's the constant doing all of these external things to.
Absolutely.
Feel better about yourself or to somehow validate yourself. So
absolutely.
I think all of that kind of, you know, comes together. Okay. So I'm handing you the mic. I'm giving you the
absolutely.
Mic. Okay.
And you're so right. And I think, you know, for a lot of times with women, we are so together in out what the world can see, but right. We are so crumbled and broken on the inside. And so I tend to get women, surprisingly, I have a lot of college age young women that I've gotten, and men, you know, young people in a millennial and a zillennial generation, they gonna come to therapy. I don't know if it's trendy or what it is, but they're gonna get them some help. They have no stigma about therapy at all. And they don't care what anybody have to say. If grandma, like, I don't know why you're in therapy anyway. I don't know why you're talking to someone. They don't care. And I like that about them. And so what I do find is that I get a lot of women at age 40, 50, and 60 who really don't know who they are. Their children are grown or are growing up, and they, they're not really, the husband, you know, raising the family is what kept the family together. But now here you are with this kid is gone, and it's just you and him, and you don't really know him, and he don't really know you. And you try to figure some stuff out. You feel, you know, you feel so down in the dumps because you don't really understand who you are. And I get a lot of women at that stage between 40 and 60 with that same scenario that they don't really understand who they are. They've accomplished some things, you know, or not, or, you know, or raised a good family or not, but they just don't know who they are. And so what, you know, one thing I pride myself on, you know, why I say I'm the solution therapist, because I believe in confronting things. So not in a, not an aggressive way, but in a way that you really can take a look at and peel that onion back. And so what I rely on two things is wisdom. And everything that I do, I have relied on wisdom, and it allows me to see things that I, that people generally don't see, even clinicians that generally don't see that, because I've treated a lot of therapists also. And the other thing is, I always say, if you cannot face it, then you are sure not going to be able to fix it, and you're not going to be able to heal from it. And a lot of people don't face a lot of things, and we just put a Band-Aid on it and keep going. And that's what kind of trips us up along the line. It's going to come out in some kind of way eventually. It trips us up.
Yeah. I was just trying to think of a saying that my mother used to say, and I can't remember it. It was something about, something to the effect of, it's going to come out in a wash eventually. Something along those lines.
My dad says that. He says, if it doesn't come out in a wash, it's going to come out in a rinse.
Right. It's, yeah, there you go.
And I love when he say that. I love when I heard him say that. And he said that last year to me. We were talking about something, and I was like, I like that, Daddy, because you're right. It's going to, either it's going to come out in a wash, or it's going to, when a rinse cycle comes on it, it rinses that dirty water right off. Yeah. So it's going to, if it don't come out in a wash, it's definitely going to come out in a rinse. So it definitely comes out in some kind of way in all of our lives, you know, whether we are in therapy or not. And I, what I really like is people who are proactive about their care. You know, you don't have to have a crisis to have a therapist. You know, I always say that a good doctor, a good hairdresser, and a good therapist are three things that we need to have on our Rolodex. Or, you know, I know people don't use Rolodexes anymore, but we need to have them in our contact list. Right. So when I need them, you know, we go get our hair more than we go to the doctor. We go get our hair done more than we go to the doctor. And we definitely go to the doctor more than we come to therapy. Right. But when I need you, you're there. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
But, you know, just even care. In terms of going to the doctor. Okay, so it's a couple of things. One, I mean, that was just the tip of it in terms of women going to the doctor, or just people going to the doctor in general. You know, it's like they wait until it's a crisis. You know, I go to the doctor, and because I'm, like, let's say I have a pain in my back, right? And I just let it go. I just pop a Motrin, pop a leave or whatever, right? Just keep on going until one day I can't get out the bed. Now I'm limping into the doctor. You know, it's just like, well, how long have you been having this pain? But, you know, I'm just saying, just kind of throwing it out there. That's what it made me think of, that I was surprised to find out a lot of people don't go and get regular physicals anymore. But that's all another thing. So, and that's interesting too, that you talked about the younger people. You said they're gonna get them some therapy.
they will. I get so many calls from people under 30. It's just amazing to me that they're receptive to what you have to say to them. Mm-hmm. You know, even though I'm a little bit older, I do have two therapists that work with me contractually that are 30, like under 35. Okay. But they want someone older, and I'm okay with that, because I definitely can relate. I don't care how old you are. I can relate to you. I don't see children anymore. But I used to see kids and families a whole lot. I don't anymore see anyone under 18 or 19 years old anymore. But, you know, I try to keep myself abreast, and my younger clients help me keep abreast of what's going on and the lingo and all of that, so that I can connect with people for sure. And my son's 24. My daughter is 33 years old. So they're both of those. I have two kids in the millennial and a zillennial generation. So they help keep me abreast of what's going on. And then I have a granddaughter who's 15. So between the three of them, I understand what's going on.
Right, so, right. You know, you got a pretty good eye on everything that's happening out there.
Absolutely, absolutely, okay. Absolutely. So I just think that people are, you know, not forthcoming. And you're very right. Even with mental health, people wait until they're in crisis mode to seek help. And you don't have to be, you can be as, like you would, be proactive about, you know, eating right and losing weight and doing those things. You can do the same thing with your mental health. Be proactive and making sure that you're together so that you don't get to the crisis point, or you're not there alone. You know, and I realized during the pandemic that it was so many people who were going through anxiety because they were so afraid. We didn't know what was going to happen to us. We didn't know if this was it for any of us, because they made it so scary during the pandemic, and a lot of people died during the pandemic. And so after they started to open things up, now I'm dealing with the grief of, you know, then I started dealing with the grief of, hey, I lost this person, I lost my job, I lost this, I lost that during the pandemic. You know, so there were definitely consequences to us going through what we went through.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want you to talk about that. So remember, let's go back to just talking about the pandemic and, you know, mental health. But before we go there, I want to just add again that in terms of dealing with women, you had mentioned before women between the ages of like 40 and 60, I think you said. Yes. And I've been noticing the same thing, even in my, day therapy job, as well as in my business. I've noticed that a lot of times when I ask women things along the lines of like, well, what do you do for yourself? You know, or what do you do for fun? Or what are your hobbies? You know, it's just like, I get a blank stare and it's kind of like, that's a good question, you know? So I really think that it's important to kind of like take note of that, you know, just in terms of women losing themselves. I don't mean it, ladies, in a, you know, in a bad way. It's just, I think, something that tends to happen. You know, you're so focused on your family, you know, your children, your husband's needs, that you just kind of, yourself and your own needs and your likes and dislikes and passions just have a tendency just to kind of almost like fade to blank, you know? And so it's just, I just think it's important to not allow that to happen. You know, you can still, you know, be an excellent mother, be an excellent wife, you know, fulfill whatever, you know, excellent daughter, fulfill whatever, you know, your goals are in the community and things of that nature. But it's not selfish to take care of yourself, you know, and don't let it get to a point where, you know, you just don't know yourself anymore. You know?
And that's one thing that we're taught, that is selfish to focus on you, or we feel so guilty. Like the mom guilt is so real.
It is.
And you know, everybody, you know, when I talk to people, like they just don't, because their kids come first, and your kids, you know, they didn't ask to be here. They should come first. But I remember reading a story about a lady who now has made this a business, teaching women how to tap into self-care. I remember she said that she called her mother and she called her mother when she was pregnant at the time, having her first child. And her mother was not excited. And so her mother had been married to her father for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And her mother, she said her mother cried or she wasn't excited when she told her mother. She was, you know, this lady was happy that her and her husband were having their first child. But mm-hmm. her mother made a point to her to say, make sure that I don't care what happens, that you take yourself on a date every week. And she was like, huh? What? You know, of all the things you can say while I'm getting ready to have this child. But what her mother was saying, that she has given up so much of herself and so much of her own life and her own goals and her own purpose for the sake of her husband and her kids. So she was telling her to make sure that she tends to herself, regardless of the roles that we all have. And we have the roles of mother, the role of wife, the role of partner, the role of, you know, being in the workforce. We have all these roles, but the role of self-care, the role of self and the role of purpose. We don't have that. And some of us never get that. Mm-hmm. And we wonder why we walk through life just really unfulfilled, because we don't understand that. When I ask people the question about what are your strengths? So many people can't tell me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, I tell them that's okay. If you don't know it now, you know, hopefully you'll learn that as we go through this process, but it's so many people that cannot tell me what their strengths are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I agree. So many people. It's a lot of people, you know, and it's just, I don't know. I watched my mother too. You know, my mother didn't have any sort of an identity outside of us kids and the family, mm-hmm. you know, and like you said, I just think it's so common, even to the point where it's even frowned upon, you know, because I know, you know, I have one child, he'll be 13 shortly. And I know when I talk about different things to different people about me, you know, it's kind of like, you know what I mean? Well, you're a mother, you know, you don't need to be concerned with that, you know. And I'm just like, well, my mental health is important, because if I don't have good mental health, what kind of a mother am I going to be? I mean, so everything within balance.
And that's the one thing that's very hard for us to do, is to have balance in a lot of things that we do, whether it be work or motherhood or being a partner. Balance is hard. You know, change is hard. You know, it changes something that we talk about often, but until we put the action words behind it, it means nothing. It's just a dream that we have. Mm-hmm. And we don't put the action words behind the change. And I often talk about the scenario of the caged bird. So you have three birds in a cage. And if you open the door, one bird is going to stay in there because he's used to being caged up, being locked up. He's going to not even try to leave. He's going to stay in there. One bird is going to fly out immediately because he wants change. He wants to do something different. He wants to soar and see what the world has to offer. Most of us teeter in the middle. We got one foot out the door because we want something different, and one foot in the door because this is the familiarity that we have. Even if it's miserable, it's the familiar misery that we have. Right. So we stay like teetering outside that door, inside the door, because we're afraid. And uncertainty is a fearful place to be, you know, for a lot of people, you know, that uncertainty. So I think that that is what trips us up a lot, you know, being in the middle of wanting to change, but not having the tools to change.
Right. Wanting to change, but not having the tools to change.
Absolutely. Like that. Absolutely.
And how you, and you mentioned that it was a lady earlier that that you, I guess, ran across. And you said she actually teaches women how to take care of themselves.
Yeah, I think she from there created a business, and she has these online. That's how I got. I don't know how I came across her a few years ago, but she made a like a 7-figure business with trying to reach out to women to show them how to. You know, she probably does a lot more at this point because I'm sure she's diversified herself, but. At the time, like, you know, you talk about the Budgetista. I'm not sure if you know who she is.
Typically. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, with her, she started out a person who, you know, lost her job. Her credit score went down. She was couch surfing, and she started out teaching women, you know, learning herself how to budget to get back on track, and then teaching it to other women, you know, first, you know, for free in a nonprofit, you know, or a nonprofit to. Now she has a 7-figure business that she does, where she teaches people about money and their whole attitude about money and budgeting. You know, you can have the things you want, but within reason, you know, you work toward the things you want. So a lot of us, you know, we can be sleeping on the couch, but we're driving $50,000 cars, but we're laying on somebody else's couch. You know, that doesn't make sense to me at all. So.
I don't care how you package that one up. It's a hot mess.
It doesn't make sense at all. Yeah, you're driving good, but you know, you're sleeping crazy and you're living crazy.
So let's segue or end on this note. I mean, of course, I want you to, you know, at the very end, tell everyone, you know, how they can contact you. And also, too, then I want you to get into, like, if there's, you know, like specialties that your office deals with and, you know, things of that nature. But I want you to talk a little bit now about COVID, because I know, or the pandemic. I know you talked a little, kind of touched on it a little bit earlier about how you have noticed, you know, or basically what you see in your practice as a result of living in this pandemic.
Absolutely. I know for me, in just 3 years, I have serviced almost 500 people. My practice has serviced almost 500 people in 3 years, which is good for me as a business owner, but it says that people really are in need of help. And so what the pandemic did for us, it really, you know, one thing it did was really help people to understand that, hey, I'm not okay, and I do need help, and it's okay to get help. And grief and anxiety were safety nets for people to come into therapy for. You know, because it doesn't say I'm really going crazy and then I've lost somebody. So, but when they get in therapy, they realize that they really have struggled with a lot of things, a lot of childhood things or a lot of other things that have been hidden away. And so I think during a pandemic, you know, it was a blessing and a curse to us. It was definitely a curse because so many people died and we, you know, people got sick and we lost so many people, but it was a blessing as far as therapy is concerned, because it made people really take a look at how they're doing things. For some people, they did not change at all. Once things died down, for others, they did change. You know, a lot of businesses were created during the pandemic because people couldn't earn money the traditional way. Like they said, they had the great resignation at that time. And thankfully, I was able to be a part of that. You know, but COVID really kind of like put a light on a lot of things with people with their mental health, not just their physical health, but their mental health. It really shined a light on that a lot of us are not okay. And so for therapists, we're overwhelmed as therapists, to the point where I hear people all the time where I call this therapist or I email this therapist and they never call me back, or they're not calling me back. So I think people are so overwhelmed with the capacity of people that need help. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes no skin for me to help somebody do what I do, because we're all needed. People are always going to need therapy. They're always going to need a mental health professional, no matter what. Unfortunately, we're always going to be in need at some capacity. So, you know, it takes no skin off my back to show somebody to do what I do, because somebody showed me how to do what they do. So I really think the pandemic shined a lot of light on the fact that people are not okay. Mm-hmm. And I think that we, in general, because of things that are going on in the world, we're inundated by trauma every day. We respond differently, because if it doesn't directly affect me, then I may not be as responsive as you might be if you were, you know, had a loved one that you lost, or a loved one in a gun, you know, lost a gun. You know, I'm not affected in that regard daily or directly, but I am affected daily. I remember sitting there watching TV and they were having, I think the eighth or ninth child in Detroit died at the hands of a drive-by shooting. And one day I just broke out crying because, you know, no, that wasn't my child. I didn't know who that kid was. But good Lord, you know, who could not be affected after hearing back to back to back, eight or nine kids being innocent children being shot in a drive-by shooting? So that kind of stuff, we're inundated daily by trauma, but we're not affected directly by trauma.
Right.
I hadn't thought of it like that. You're right. You're right. Daily by trauma. Even if, I mean, like you said, just simply turning on the news. Just turning on the news, you know. Yeah. You're right. I hadn't really looked at it like that.
Yeah.
But all of us, you know, living in today's society, there's so much going on that 100%. You know.
Yeah. and we're all, you know, really, we're created to be relational beings, but it's so much selfishness and individuality, you know, going on around us. But we're created to be relational. So what happens to you, I should be affected by that. Not so much that, you know, directly, like it's like what I said, what happens to you doesn't necessarily directly affect me, but I should show some concern as a human being because you are affected by what you are affected by.
Right. Now, this is an off the cuff question. How do you think social media has impacted mental health?
In a good way and a bad way. I think in a good way, because there's so many advertisements, commercials, and celebrities that are really talking about mental health, and that's been their platform. Social media has been their platform. You know, you see all these commercials. I see a lot of therapists on social media now that I had not ever seen before. So in a good way, in one way, it's been good. In another way, it could be, like I said, a blessing and a curse, because we're inundated so rapidly by bad news and trauma. And then we get news that we get snippets of stuff, but not the whole picture. But we take the little snippet and run with it instead of trying to really research what is really going on. And so in that regard, it has done a disservice to us in a lot of ways. It causes a lot of anxiety. We compare ourselves to people who we think have made it. They really have not made it, but on social media, they look like they have it all together. I remember reading a story on social media. I can't remember this lady's name, but I remember a lady said she reached out to this lady to be a part of her conference. Okay. And just 2 hours ago, she saw this lady out, like, taking pictures of doing a photo shoot with her outfit of the day on, with red bottoms and her expensive purse. But when she reached out to this lady directly, she told her that, sis, I'm really literally sleeping on my friend's couch right now. I don't know where I'll be in two weeks or 2 months. Mm. And but she painted the picture as if she had it all together. But, you know, I'm glad she was honest with her. But that made me really think about that social media presents a picture that really is not always there. And we compare ourselves to that. And it causes anxiety for a lot of us. Like, we don't think we're beautiful enough. We don't think we have the breasts that they have or the behind that they have. Or we don't think that we've come so far in our career like they have. But they really have not made it. They just presented you that front. And so in that regard, social media has been a curse for us. But in other regards, it's been a platform of really spreading this good news about mental health and mental health awareness, as well as even our medical attention, you know, medical health and things that we were not aware of before. It really has created a platform for people to tell their stories and to talk about what they were not able to talk about before.
I think so. I agree with you. There's good and bad. Mm-hmm. I've had clients talk to me about, you know, when they scroll through different people's timelines, they, you know, they start to feel, you know, very inadequate, that they, you know, that they haven't come far enough. And, you know, they're just constantly on this kind of comparison wheel, mm-hmm. you know? So I agree with you. I can see the there's some positive things, you know, like you said, more access, you know, maybe more knowledge about it, more, people being able to tell their story. Like, I guess, what's her name? Is it Jennifer Lewis? Is that it? Is that her name? Jennifer Lewis?
The actress?
The actress, yes.
Yes. The one who has bipolar disorder.
Right. Yes. Yes. You know, so just kind of like thinking about her speaking out, you know, has really, you know, things along those are some of the positives. You know,
people she's get been telling her story a long time, but it's just now being heard. But she's been telling her story a very long time. Okay. But it, like I said, it was not okay to talk about those things back when she started talking about it. Mm-hmm. But now it's okay. And people see that even though she has a diagnosis of bipolar disorder, she's very functional, very lively, makes a lot of money, you know, doing what she needs to do, even though she's eccentric at sometimes, but that's worked well for her. So, you know, I'm glad she now has this platform that people are listening and they're being aware, and like they have not before.
Mm-hmm. So absolutely.
Absolutely. So it's been a blessing and a curse to us.
Blessing and a curse. So Griselda, talk to us now about a little bit more specifics about you and your company. So tell us exactly, give us the name again, where you're located, any particular specialties, you know, do you do virtual as well as, you know, in person? Just tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay. My practice is called Life Changing Therapeutic Services. And I have this arm that I haven't developed fully called In Touch Moments or In Touch Destiny. That's my my coaching arm, my awareness arm, you know, because I plan to hopefully do a podcast. That's something I've been putting off also for a couple years. But the In Touch Moments really gives us the creativity to have a conversation about mental health and spirituality and other things about that nature. One of the things that I specialize in my practice is, first of all, I treat anybody, every situation. But one of the things I really have specialized in is marriage and couples therapy. I do get a lot of, you know, some of my colleagues, they won't even see couples or marriage counseling because it's, you know, in their mind, it's a lot, you know, for one thing, it's hard to bill for that. And for two, it's difficult because it's so much drama related around that. But for me, I've only had a couple bad situations. But for the most part, you know, I always tell this joke too, when I get a man who calls me for couple therapy or marriage counseling, it's because his woman is on her way out the door. And she's already told him for a year or 2 years that they need counseling. And he told her, It's nothing wrong with me, something wrong with you. We don't need counseling. But now she's getting ready to walk out the door. And so now I get the, and that, it has never failed. But one time, one guy called me for preventative, you know, him and his wife to get on, you know, preventative stuff. But every time that a man has called me is because his wife was like, this is her last straw. But, you know, so that was one of my specialties. I am completely a virtual practice, so I do not see people in person. And, you know, I don't foresee that in the future, but who knows? You know, I may do a hybrid kind of method of in-person therapy because some people are seeking that, the in-person contact, but there aren't a lot of therapists available doing in-person therapy. And so, you know, a lot of people are in that regard behind because they don't have the capacity or the availability in their area. One thing I think virtual therapy does for us, it allows us to treat and see people anywhere in the world, this country and outside this country. So that's the great thing about teletherapy. But that's, you know, one of my specialties. Like I said, I deal with men are now coming to me more and more and more frequently for therapy. I've always worked with women and they're, you know, dealing with brokenness and healing and trauma, childhood trauma, sexual abuse. And so I have a lot of background. I work with domestic violence victims. I work with sexually abused children and women. I've worked in a lot of capacities in my career that affords me the wealth of knowledge to treat people. And I meet people where they are and try to confront the things that they need to confront. And that's what I do. And so I love what I do. I'm passionate about what I do. And I thank God for what he's afforded me. I always say that I have a double portion because I am an ordained evangelist. I can marry the two passions that I have spiritually. I'm listed as a Christian counselor, you know, but a person doesn't have to be a Christian to come to me, or they don't have to talk about Christianity to come to me. But I, you know, somehow we tend to throw it in, you know, when you are an evangelist, you tend to throw it in, when, you know, when it's appropriate. So I always say that the Lord has given me a double portion. I'm able to marry the both of the best of both of my worlds together to help people. Okay. So yes, absolutely.
So we have one more minute. So tell us where they can find you. They want to reach out to you, follow you, connect with you.
I'm on LinkedIn as Griselda Ramsey, LMSW. I think I'm on Facebook. I have a business page, Life Changing Therapeutic Services. My name is there, Griselda Ramsey. Also, I'm on Instagram as Life Changing Therapeutic Services. Oh, LifeChangingTherapeutics.gr. You'll find me on there. I also am listed on TikTok even as a solution therapist on TikTok. Solutions therapist on TikTok. So I have many platforms, and I have a YouTube channel that I haven't developed yet either. I guess I'll do more of that once I start showing my presence on social media more. I'll download more things. So, and my email address is lifechangingtherapeutic@gmail.com. You can also find me on Psychology Today. You can find me on Open Path. And you can also find me on Marnark or Simple Practice, which is a platform also that I use for my practice. So there's a lot of ways that people can reach out to me.
You said, what was it you said, Monarch?
Yes, Monarch is a directory that's connected to Simple Practice. Oh, so okay. If somebody wants to request an appointment or anything, they go through Monarch and request an appointment through me, and it'll show me on Simple Practice, hey, this person has requested an appointment. And I'm also able to, like, people have, I have my Instagram and my Facebook page set up where they can receive an appointment inquiry also.
Oh, okay.
So they can talk to me directly. You know, I'll call people directly once I get that inquiry because I like to talk to people directly. But I'll get the inquiry through those entities or those social media platforms.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. We are ending for today. Thank you, Griselda, for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a good time.
Yeah, I had a wonderful time having you, and you really, this talk was very informative. I got a lot out of it. I'm sure our listeners will, and hopefully you will also get some new potential clients as well, or possible collaborations. So thank you again.
Absolutely.
All right. Well,
anytime you want to have me back, just let me know. I really had a good time being on your show. And thank you so much for that chance encounter that we had at the skating rink, running into each other. So, you know, you just never know how God connects people together and for what reason. But I just thank God for just meeting you and connecting with you and collaborating with you.
Same here. Same here. I feel the same way. So we are finished with today's episode of A Queen's Roundtable Show and Podcast. If you caught us in the middle, go ahead and make sure you listen to the entire episode. And make sure you join us next week at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Absolutely. All right. So until then, everyone, I'm your host, Dr. Jacqueline Kabat-Harrison, and I look forward to meeting with you again next week, same time. All right. And make sure you subscribe to A Queen's Roundtable channel. All right. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.